Mahmud, Siberia to Hungary. 2015. 15 to 16 days from home. Mahmud stared at the gun pointed at him. Was this real? Or was he asleep and having a nightmare? The Siberian taxi driver waved the pistol at Mahmud's family. You can pay 300 euros, he demanded. This wasn't a dream. It was real. Mahmud had been groggy just seconds before, but now he was wide awake, his heart hammering. His eyes felt dry even though his shirt clung to him with sleep, sweat, and he blinked rapidly. As he looked at his parents, they were already awake, his father hugging the still sleeping while weeping protectively. Don't shoot, please, Mahmud's father said. He threw one of his arms protectively across Mahmud and his father. 300 euros, said the taxi driver. 300 euros! That was more than twice what they had agreed to pay the driver. Please, Dad begged. You not die, you pay 300. The taxi driver yelled. His arm shook. The gun danced between the two front seats. Mahmud's mother closed her eyes and shrank away. Mahmud's father threw up his hand. We'll pay, we'll pay. They were being held at gunpoint in the middle of nowhere in a foreign country. What else could he do? Mahmud's heart thundered in his chest as his father handed Walid to Mom and fumbled with the money hidden inside his shirt under the belt. Mahmud wanted to say something, to stop this man from threatening his family. But what was he to do? Mahmud was helpless, and that made him even madder. With shaking hands, Mahmud's father counted out 300 euros and shoved them into the taxi driver. Why did he demand the whole stash of money? Why didn't he demand the whole stash of money? Mahmud didn't understand. You get out. Get out, the taxi driver said. Mahmud and his family didn't have to be told twice. They threw open the car doors, scrambled outside before the doors were even fully closed again, and the Volkswagen tore off down the dark road and its red taillights disappearing around the curve. Mahmud trembled with anger and fear. His mother shook with quiet sobs. Mahmud's father pulled them into a hug. Well, Mahmud's father said, at last, I'm definitely giving that taxi driver a bad view on TripAdvisor. Mahmud's quivering legs gave out. He sank to the ground. Tears streamed down his face as though he'd been held back by a dam before, and now the floodgates had suddenly been opened. He had a gun pointed right at his face. As long as he lived, Mahmud would never forget that feeling. A paralyzed terror of powerlessness, and his mother sat down on the road with him and hugged him. Mahmud's tears became harder, fueled by everything that had come before, the bombing of their house, the attack on their car, struggling to live in Izmari, the long hours in sea, and of course, Hannah, mostly Hannah. I'm sorry, Mom, Mahmud blubbered. I'm so sorry I made you give Hannah away. His mother stroked Mahmud's hair and shook her head. No, my beautiful boy. If the boat hadn't come along when it did, if you wouldn't have convinced me to take her, she would have drowned. I could keep us above water. I couldn't keep both of us above water. You saved her. I know you did. She's out there somewhere. We just have to find her. Mahmud nodded at his mother. I'll find her, Mom. Again, Mom. I promise. Mahmud and his mother cried and held each other until Mahmud remembered they weren't getting any closer to Hannah or Germany. He dragged his sleeve across his wet mouth and nose, and his mother kissed him on the forehead. That thief took us halfway to Hungary, at least, Mahmud's father said, looking at his phone. We're on a back road about an hour's drive from the border. I think we're close to a bus stop. This means we'll have to walk again, though. Mahmud helped his mother stand, and his father held Walid up higher on his shoulder. Mahmud's little brother had slept through the whole thing. Mahmud worried about his brother. Air raids, shootouts, taxi holdups, nothing seemed to faze him anymore. He was just keeping his tears and screams pent up inside. Or was he becoming so used to these horrible things that have happened all around him that he didn't even notice anymore? Didn't care? Would he come to life again when they got to Germany? If they got to Germany? They made it to the bus stop in time to catch the late bus to Hargos, an Serbian city in the Hungarian border. Even more Syrian refugees had collected there, but no one was getting through. Not by rail, not by road or rail. Even outside the country, when Mahmoud and his family had crossed into Macedonia and Siberia, the Hungarians had a fence. It wasn't finished yet, but even now at night, Hungarian soldiers were hard at work driving 4-meter-tall metal poles into the ground along the border and stretching chain-link fence between them. Once the fence had hung, another group came behind them and attacked 3 tiers of razor wire coil to it to keep people from climbing over. The Hungarians were close to closing their border. "But we don't want to go to Hungary, Mahmoud said. "We just want to get through to go to Australia." "The Hungarians don't care, I guess," Dad said. They don't want us in their country, whether we're coming or going." A group of refugees suddenly rushed a part of the unfinished fence, trying to get through before it was done. "We're not terrorists," someone cried. "We're refugees. We want to get through to Germany." "They'll take us," someone cried, and there were more shouts and screams, and before Mahmoud knew what was happening, he and his family were caught up in the press of refugees trying to get across the border. Mahmoud was jostled from every side. He clung to the back of his father's shirt, hanging on like Dad was a life preserver. They were going over a waterfall. As frightening as the stampede was, Mahmoud was excited too. The refugees were finally doing something. They weren't just deers disappearing into their tent cities. They were standing up and saying, "Here we are. Look at us. Help us." But the Hungarian soldiers weren't interested in helping. As the refugees swarmed the border, the soldiers in the blue uniforms and red berets and red armbands hurried to stop them, firing tear gas canisters into the crowd. One of the canisters exploded near Mahmoud with a bang, and people screamed. Gray-white cloud erupted around them. Mahmoud's eyes burned like someone had sprayed hot pepper juice in them, and mucus poured from his nose. He choked on the gas. His lungs seized up. He couldn't breathe. It was like he was drowning on land. He fell to his knees, clutching his chest, gasping endlessly for air. "I'm not going to die," Mahmoud thought. "I'm not going to die. I'm not going to die. I'm not going to die." That was Mahmoud, and that was... That was Mahmoud, Siberia to Hungary, 2015, 15 to 16 days from home. That was pages 247 through 252.